This is an encore presentation of The Breakdown with Christopher Hayes. New episodes of The Breakdown will return next week. For a complete archive of The Breakdown, visit thenation.com/thebreakdown.
Hello and welcome to The Breakdown, brought to you by The Nation Magazine and TheNation.com. I'm Chris Hayes, Washington editor of The Nation. Each week here on The Breakdown, we take your questions via Twitter at Chris L. Hayes or via email at TheBreakdown@TheNation.com. The way it works is this. You send us questions about what's perplexing you this week in Washington, and we try to break it down.
Will I run to the rock? Please hide me, I run to the rock. Please hide me, I run to the rock.
Welcome, welcome to week 7 of The Breakdown, episode 7 in a collector's series. This week we got a lot of questions about everyone's favorite topic of conversation of late, the filibuster. Rachel Maddow, as you know, has been running a campaign to rename the filibuster and been getting some suggestions. I was on the show earlier this week to talk about it, and we got a lot of questions that more or less amounted at how do we get rid of the thing? Perhaps the most concise version of that comes from Twitter user Jam Meyerson. He writes to say, why would a change in Senate rules, like abolition or mitigation of the filibuster, be exempt from a cloture vote? Okay, we are going to answer this question, and it's going to get pretty wonky, but we assume that if you're listening to my voice right now, that is the sort of thing you're into. Let's start by sort of laying out the conditions that we're dealing with. Senate Rule 22 is a part of the rules and procedures that govern the Senate. It requires a vote of 60 senators to close debate or cloture on a motion to move the matter forward. What has happened, obviously, over the last few Congresses, particularly when the Republicans are in minority, is that they have taken what used to be a rarely invoked procedure, which is the filibuster, and made it just absolutely standard and de rigueur. I mean, you can look at the graphs, we'll link to it on the website, that show that it's just skyrocketed. In the 50s, there was about one cloture invocation per session. We're now looking at about 140 for the last Congress. So it's totally out of control. Okay, what do we do about it? Well, there's a few different options, and I'm going to walk through them from the most difficult to achieve to the easiest to achieve. The most straightforward way to reform the filibuster is to change the rules. And it's very clear in Senate Rule 22, which spells out cloture, that in order to change the rules, all you need is a majority vote. But, alas, if someone objects and they filibuster your attempt to change the rules, you need two-thirds or 67 votes to overcome that filibuster. So let's say they propose a resolution to change the filibuster, and someone obviously from some party, the Republicans, is going to object. And so to override that filibuster, they're going to need 67 votes. So there's actually two different kinds of filibusters. There's the regular filibuster of 60 votes for laws, and there's a higher threshold filibuster of 67 vote override for any of the rules and procedures. So I think we can safely say no one's going to get 67 votes to overturn the filibuster through the straightforward way of going through the rules and procedures. Tom Harkin and Jeanne Shaheen, who are two senators, have introduced legislation that would reform the filibuster in the following way. The first time you brought a motion up for cloture, it would require 60 votes. But then 2 days later, you could bring it up again. It would only require 57. And 2 days later, you can bring it up again. It would be down to 55, and so on until you got down to 51. Now, there's an interesting question, which is that does that bill need the 60 votes to cross the legislative cloture hurdle, or does it need the 67 because it's changing a rule? Harry Reid's office seems to indicate they believe because it's changing a Senate rule, it needs 67. So it's highly unlikely that we're going to see that Harkin-Shaheen bill pass, although, you know, who knows. Okay, so that's the most straightforward way. Now we're going to talk about other ways that we could change the filibuster that don't require 67 votes and, in fact, don't even require 60. And there are two ways, conceivably, this can be done. The first has to do with the fact that at the beginning of every session, the Senate sets rules for that session. So at the beginning of the 110th Congress on the first day, the Senate is going to pass some rules that apply to that Congress. Now, there's a fascinating legal question here. And the legal question is this. Is the Senate a continuing body? Which is to say, is there a gap in the rules? Do the rules from the previous Senate control the current Senate? Now, Some people argue that the answer to that is yes, for the following reason. Only a third of the Senate turns over in every Congress, and so there's always a quorum from the old Senate in the new Senate, and therefore it's a continuing body and there is no gap in the rules. But back in 1957, this question was brought up, precisely for the reasons we're dealt with now, which is a senator wanted to change the rules of the filibuster. And he asked the presiding officer, and the presiding officer at the time was a man by the name of Richard Milhouse Nixon, and he did not issue an official ruling, but he basically said no. There is a moment at the beginning of the Senate where only majority rules control. And when you think about it, there's a certain logic to this for this reason. Let's imagine that the Senate were to pass a rule in which they required 85 votes to pass anything. What you would find yourself in is a one-way ratchet, which is the Senate could bind future Senates to have higher and higher thresholds in order to pass laws, and they could never ratchet it back down. So think about the logic of that. You could imagine a Senate saying, we need more unanimity. We're going to have 90 or 95 votes. And if it is the case that the Senate is a continuing body, it would mean it would never essentially be possible to ratchet that back down unless you can get the 80 or 85 votes in the future. And so I think there's a strong case to be made, and there's some precedent to this because it's been tried several times, where at the beginning of the session, what's controlling the Senate rules is just basic parliamentary procedure. And so at the beginning of the Senate, a Democratic senator could propose changing Rule 22, and what would happen is this. Someone would object, and they would raise a constitutional point of order that by proposing to revoke Rule 22, they were evading the rules of the Senate, and that was unconstitutional. And the chair would rule on that motion, and let's say the chair ruled on the motion that you're not right, or the chair could give the motion to the Senate. But here's the key thing. When he referred the motion to the Senate, right, in which the Republican has objected and says, you can't do this. When he refers the motion to the Senate votes on a majority basis. And so if the Senate voted at that moment on a majority basis to say, no, you're wrong in your objection, it's not true, all they need is 51 votes. So the key is that you need to jump through a series of procedural hurdles to sort of transmogrify yourself from the world of the 60 votes to the world of the 50 votes. And one way of doing that is raising this procedural issue at the beginning of the Congress, allowing someone to reject, and then the chair referring the matter of that appeal to the floor of the Senate. So in order to do this, you would have to do it at the beginning of the new Congress. But what if you don't want to wait to the beginning of the new Congress? What if you wanted to change the filibuster now? Ah, we arrive at the notorious 2005 nuclear option, you will all recall. The Republicans used to really hate the filibuster, and in fairness to good faith, there were a lot of liberals who loved it when we were in the minority. Those liberals were wrong, I will say. And a nuclear option, the idea goes like this. What is the ultimate arbiter of the constitutionality of a Senate procedure? This is the legal question on the table. And the answer to that is the United States Senate. And the mechanism by which that constitutionality is defined is through what's called a point of order. So imagine the following scenario. A motion on the floor fails to get cloture, right? It doesn't get the 60 votes. A Democratic senator rises up and he says, I make a point of order. Point of order is a technical term basically saying, I want to raise a constitutional objection to what is happening on the floor. Remember, the Senate body is the ultimate arbiter of the constitutionality of its own rules. And this senator says, I'm raising a point of order against the 60-vote cloture rule. It's a violation of the spirit of the Constitution and the letter of the Constitution. Remember, the Constitution requires, when the Senate has supermajority requirements in terms of ratifying a treaty, right, 67 votes. And so it's implied that everything else is majority. So the senator says, I'm raising a point of order. This is unconstitutional. The chair would then rule on the motion, and he would say, again, let's say that everyone's behind this, right? Vice President Joe Biden's behind this. He would say, you are right. And immediately a Republican would raise up and say, I object. I appeal the chair's ruling. Okay, now we've hit 51 vote pay dirt because there would then be a motion on the floor to table the appeal. A little confusing, but let's just step through it one more time. Senator gets up, he raises a point of order. He says, the filibuster is unconstitutional. It's sustained by the vice president, who's the chair. A Republican or someone else objects and says, no, no, no. I appeal the ruling, and then a motion is introduced to table the appeal. The motion to table the appeal can pass with 51 votes. And so all it would take would be a majority of the Senate, 50 plus the one, because the vice president could vote if there were a tiebreaker, to sustain that appeal, and you would have gotten rid of the filibuster and created an entirely new precedent. I mean, this would be a massive shift in the way the Senate conducted business. So that's the way the filibuster so-called nuclear option would play out. Now, I've gone on quite long here, but I'm going to make two more points. One is that in order to do any of this, you still need the 50 votes. Plus, you need the vice president on board. It's unclear whether those 50 votes are there. Senators are conservative creatures. They belong to the most exclusive club in the world. They don't like change, as we've seen. And the filibuster has a perverse result of conferring maximal power on each senator, right? The harder it is to get to 60, the more power you have as an individual member. Second of all, it's important here to look back at the history of the evolution of the filibuster's institution. Until 1917, there was no filibuster, there was just unlimited debate, which means just one senator could debate forever. And then in 1917, Democratic senators were objecting to some isolationist Republicans who were blocking votes on things having to do with the Treaty of Versailles and the end of World War I, said, this is insane, we can't conduct any business. And so they forced the issue. They made a point of order, and what ended up happening was a compromise was forged in which cloture was invoked at two-thirds. And then, again, it was tested in 1957, and it survived. It was tested after Watergate by Frank Church. And, again, it was brought to the brink of a procedural constitutional crisis, and a compromise was forged to bring it down to 60 votes. And what's important about this history is that, in some ways, the procedural details I've laid out for you in this podcast, those are secondary to the level of political will. The history of the evolution and reform of the filibuster has always been a situation in which there is a groundswell of support, a broad recognition the institution is broken, it's dysfunctional, it's impeding progress. There is momentum behind the people that want to change it, and they force the issue. And because the issue is never actually settled, for all the reasons I laid out, what ends up happening is they sort of step back from the break and everyone comes up with a compromise. And we saw that with the Gang of 12 with the nuclear option. The important thing to recognize about this is that if Democrats want to change the filibuster, it is incumbent upon them to force the issue, to actually create a political groundswell, to really start moving the train forward, and then let the opponents try to figure out how they're going to avoid the crash. So hopefully we did not put you to sleep with that. Next week we will most likely have a guest in again, and we will get ourselves out of the arcane world of Senate procedure. The Breakdown is a weekly production of The Nation Magazine and TheNation.com. New audio casts are posted each Friday at TheNation.com and available on iTunes. The Breakdown was produced by Lauren North and yours truly. Senior producers at The Nation are Emily Douglas and Ben Wiskita. Comments and feedback should be sent to TheBreakdown@TheNation.com.
Oh, Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? We're gonna run to